Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the program, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. And as a reminder, this program is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's program, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Mary, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's program, Current Developments in the World of Cutaneous Lymphoma. It's a very important workshop that we have today, and we're delighted with your response to our program. Now, this program is a collaborative effort between the Lymphoma Research Foundation, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care. And it's that collaboration, and then we also have a number of other organizations that have collaborated with us as well to make this program, to tell you all about the program. And it's because of our great collaboration on this program that we've been able to reach so many of you. We have on the call today over 600 participants, and you come from all of the United States. You come from large cities and small cities. You come from suburban areas as well as rural and frontier communities. And we also have some international participants from the United Kingdom, so you really come from all over the world. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Now, I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. And those materials, there is an outline that our speakers have prepared, and there is information about all of the different collaborating organizations, their websites, their toll-free numbers, information about them as resources for you to use when this program is over and to really take advantage of those free resources. And there also is an evaluation form. We ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics and the programs that you really would like us to offer? So just take a moment and tell us what you'd like us to do, and we'll try very hard to implement, you know, your recommendations and suggestions. Now, today's program is made possible by an unrestricted educational grant to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Merck Oncology. I really want to thank them for this support of this very important program. Now, we have assembled wonderful speakers for our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Pierluigi Porcu, who is Associate Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, the Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Porcu is going to address current perspective and future directions in cutaneous lymphoma research and treatment. He's going to address the new National Comprehensive Cancer Network, NCCN, clinical practice guidelines, and he's also going to address the importance of clinical trials. Dr. Porcu.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. It's great to be on the call, and good afternoon to everybody. I'd like to start with a few definitions to introduce us to the program. First, what cutaneous means. Cutaneous is a word that comes from Latin and means something that has to do with the skin. The word lymphoma refers to a cancer of the lymphatic system or the immune system. As many of you know, lymphomas are often cancers that develop and grow within lymph nodes, spleen, and the bone marrow, although sometimes they can develop outside of the lymph nodes. In that case, they're called extranodal lymphomas. Well, the skin is one of those extranodal sites. How can a lymphoma develop in the skin, then? The immune system is made up by a network of small channels and relay stations that are called lymph nodes. The cells that live in those stations and travel in those channels are called lymphocytes. The primary function of lymphocytes is to search, identify, and fight infections. The territory that the immune system has to cover throughout the body is vast, and this requires a very efficient surveillance operation. To do that, the immune system makes use of different types of lymphocytes, which are cells of the lymphatic system. Some lymphocytes are called B cells because they originate from the bone marrow. Other cells are called T cells because they originate in the thymus, which is a gland located right under the breastbone. Regardless of whether they are where they are born, some T cells and some B cells are assigned the skin as their primary field of operation, where they do several different things. When one of the skin-specific lymphocytes becomes malignant, the cancer that results is called primary cutaneous lymphoma. Depending on whether the cell of origin is a B cell or a T cell, we have a cutaneous B cell lymphoma or a cutaneous T cell lymphoma. Most primary skin lymphomas are cutaneous T-cell lymphomas and not cutaneous B-cell lymphoma. So the rest of my talk will focus on cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. However, if anybody is interested, we may talk about cutaneous B-cell lymphomas in the question and answer session. What causes cutaneous T-cell lymphoma? If there is a single cause for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, and from now on I'm going to call it CTCL, it is not known. It is possible that exposure to environmental factors such as chemicals and infections may lead or predispose to CTCL, but no direct links have been found yet. Rarely, multiple family members may be affected by CTCL, but 99% of the times, CTCL is not a hereditary cancer. A lot of research is being done now on the causes of CTCL, and I'm completely convinced that within the next 10, 15 years, we will find it. How common is CTCL? Although CTCL is relatively rare compared to other lymphomas, the frequency has been on the rise for reasons that are not entirely clear at this point. Perhaps we are simply better at making the diagnosis, and that is certainly one component of it. Or maybe there is a true increase for reasons that are not known. Regardless, currently we estimate that there are about 2,000 new cases of CTCL every year. Most patients with CTCL are 60 years or older, but the disease can occur in patients younger than 60 and even in older children. As far as we know, the prognosis of CTCL is independent of the age of diagnosis. Another question is CTCL a single disease? Now, the name CTCL comprises essentially all skin lymphomas derived from T cells. Therefore, CTCL is not just one disease. It's multiple diseases. Now, the most common type is called mycosis fungoides, that from now on I'm going to abbreviate as MF. Another one is Sézary syndrome, usually called Sézary. Most of what we're discussing today focuses on MF and Sézary syndrome. How do we make a diagnosis of MF, and why is it so difficult? The diagnosis of MF requires a skin biopsy in a clinical presentation that is consistent with what we expect from MF. Because itchy skin and rashes are very common, and because the findings of skin biopsies can often overlap with a lot of other conditions, usually patients go through multiple doctor's visits and multiple skin biopsies before a diagnosis of MF is finally made. Sometimes it may take years before the diagnosis is secured. Now, in mycosis fungoides, the rash typically involves the trunk in a so-called swimming suit pattern. This is because areas that are exposed to sunlight tend to be less involved. The rash of MF is typically made of a flat, red patch or slightly thick, scaly plaque. Occasionally, round, bumpy lesions can be seen called tumors. These three types of skin lesions correspond to the different stages of skin disease, which I'm going to describe in a second. However, the skin rash does not look the same in all patients, and this is a source of confusion for patients and doctors alike. Also, although the majority of the patients will have itching, some will not have itching. What is Sézary syndrome? Sézary is a type of CTCL where the skin is completely red, and that is called erythroderma. Itching is extremely severe. Lymph nodes are often enlarged, and the malignant T cells are found in the circulation in the blood, sometimes in large numbers. Now, Sézary is the closest thing to a medical emergency that one can find in CTCL, which otherwise is a fairly indolent and chronic disease, and requires prompt recognition to avoid mistreatments and because of the risk of infection. Sézary syndrome can gradually develop in patients with MF after many years or may start anew in patients who never had any problems before. The prognosis of Sézary syndrome was relatively poor in the past because of lack of effective treatments, but has significantly improved over the past 10, 15 years, and multiple new treatments are available. How is MF staged, and what's the purpose of staging? In general cancer medicine, staging means identifying all the known areas of the body that are involved with cancer. This is needed to plan the appropriate treatment, like surgery, for example, and predict the odds of success. In MF, the staging system is very complicated, and there are ongoing efforts to improve it. The part of the staging that all the people on this call should be familiar with is the type of skin lesions that are present, and we call them patch, plaque, or tumor, as well as the degree of skin involvement, which is arbitrarily defined as more or less than 10%. All the other classification of the stage are less important and are more for the physician to be familiar with. In mycosis fungoides, the purpose of the staging is mostly to predict the odds of the disease worsening over time rather than defining the use of specific modalities of treatment. Most patients with MF are diagnosed with early stage, which we call patch and plaque, and have an excellent prognosis with very few odds of progressing to more advanced stage. More rarely, patients present with more advanced stage tumors. How should MF be treated? I'm not going to go in extreme detail of all the different modalities of treatment for MF. That is something that perhaps could be best addressed during the question and answer session. But the most important principle I would like to state on this call is the fact that the treatment for MF is best delivered by a multidisciplinary team, where the oncologist, the dermatologist, the radiation therapy, and the additional staff members of the healthcare team work together and think, most importantly, think alike. This is true also for early stage patients who may need only skin-directed therapy, and Dr. Lessing will discuss that in detail. For patients who need more prolonged or intensive management of the skin, the dogma in the past was to use topical therapy until it did not work anymore, and then move on to systemic treatments. Now that new and safer drugs are available, we're moving on to combine these two modalities earlier on. In the past, we only had toxic chemotherapy available for the systemic treatment of CTCL, and therefore there was a lot of concern about using that early on. Now we have new drugs available, and we can start thinking how to combine them together with topical therapy. Finally, what advances have been made recently in CTCL? The first piece of good news that I like to inform the audience is that over the past year or so, there has been a strong and concerted effort to create a national multidisciplinary network of American CTCL experts that can collaborate and work together on common goals. Because CTCL is a rare disease, clinical trials can only be completed if everybody works together. And although there was much collaboration in the past, this collaboration was not carefully organized and certainly was fairly inefficient. Now, this organization that was founded just earlier this year is called the United States Consortium for Cutaneous Lymphoma, which is abbreviated USCCL. This includes physicians from multidisciplinary specialties. The goals are, number one, to create a national registry of CTCL so that we can learn more about the natural history of the disease. Number two, to develop a tissue bank to do research. And three, to do clinical trials specifically focused on problems that are important for patients with CTCL. I'm convinced that the USCCL will significantly speed up the rate of progress in this disease. The second piece of good news is that now significant time and effort has been invested in the development of practice guidelines for community physicians who may encounter patients with CTCL and may not be familiar with the proper management of CTCL. This organization is called the NCCN, which stands for the National Cancer Center Network. It is made of a combination of all the major cancer centers in the United States, including Ohio State University, Fox Chase Cancer Center, where Dr. Lessing is, And physicians meet and develop a set of algorithms, therefore step-by-step guidelines on how to manage CTCL. This is the first time in the history of the NCCN that has been around for more than 10 years that specific guidelines for the management of CTCL have been developed. Third, several new active drugs have been approved over the past 12 to 18 months, and many more are on the verge of being approved. As a minimum, there are two or three new drugs that would be approved over the next 6 to 12 months, and there are a lot of clinical trials with new drug combinations that I'm sure will lead to new drug approval over the next over the subsequent year or two. So there is a lot of hope, I think, in the management of CTCL, both early stage and advanced stage, and there's a lot of information that is being accrued from research from multiple sources on how to combine these drugs. With this, I'd like to give the call back to Carolyn, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Porcu, for just an outstanding and very informative presentation, and also for the information in terms of the hope and the promise of many new treatments that are being developed. So thank you very much. And our next speaker is Dr. Stuart Lesson. Dr. Lesson is Director of Dermatology, Fox Chase Cancer Center. Dr. Lesson is going to address the important role of the dermatologist in treating cutaneous lymphoma. He's going to talk about current dermatology treatments and future dermatology directions in the management of CTCL, and he's also going to talk about communicating with your healthcare team. Now I turn the program over to Dr. Lesson.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the call, and let me pick up or continue the conversation by first addressing the role of the dermatologist in treating cutaneous lymphomas. Dr. Porcu indicated that cutaneous lymphoma is indeed a lymphoma, a cancer that affects the skin. So as a result, it sort of falls between specialties, between the oncologist and the dermatologist. And with early cases of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, CTCL, or mycosis fungoides variety, typically it will develop over years, and therefore the dermatologist has usually the first exposure to patients with this MF developing. Oncologists, as Dr. Porcu will tell you, are trained and spend most of their time with basically dealing with and treating established tumors. Dermatologists spend most of their time training how to recognize things on the skin and treating the skin. So they're really expert in skin and expert in getting the skin comfortable in any type of diagnosis. So besides diagnosis and treatment of early disease, the dermatologist is really important overall health of the skin. So any patient who has been diagnosed with cutaneous lymphoma, whether it's an advanced case or an early case, but particularly those who may have advanced cases and are predominantly utilizing the services of oncologists, I think it's important for each patient to have a dermatologist part of their team because they can certainly help out with skin infections, dry skin that one sees, itching, dressing of the skin, or any type of skin surgery. So it's always important to not just have a dermatologist in terms of diagnosis and treatment, but also keeping the health of the skin where most people want it to be, particularly when it's affected with the cutaneous lymphoma. The second area I wanted to touch upon was the current dermatology treatments and future directions for the management of cutaneous lymphoma. And Dr. Porcu mentioned the term skin-directed therapies, and that is a term that refers to basically therapies that involve the skin and not systemic therapies. And for CTCL, they can be categorized into three general categories: topical therapies, ultraviolet therapies, and radiation therapy. And that topical therapies have evolved throughout the years along with phototherapy and along with radiation therapy, and that in discussing skin-directed therapies as well as all therapies, you have to realize that because cutaneous lymphoma is a relatively rare disease, the amount of clinical trials and studies that have gone into studying one treatment versus another treatment has been very few and far between. So unlike breast cancer, for example, that has had thousands of patients who have been studied on clinical trials where they evaluate treatment A versus treatment B and then determine which treatment is better, there really has not been very many, very few clinical trials that allows us to face a patient and say, well, based on the information and the data and the statistics, we recommend treatment A versus treatment B. So every treatment, particularly skin-directed treatment, is really tailored to the individual based on stage, how much disease they have, and factors that can influence those treatments are, for example, other diseases that patients might have, other illnesses, diabetes, hypertension, et cetera. The other factor is patients' access to treatments, both physically, for example, for phototherapy, ultraviolet light treatments. They may not have access to an office that has phototherapy available. As most of you know, the issue with health insurance and affordability of healthcare is another major issue that will influence a choice of one treatment over the other treatment. But in terms of the skin-directed treatments specifically, let me go through what we have today. And in terms of topical therapies, we have creams and ointments and gels that fall into the categories of topical steroids, which really reduce the inflammation of the cutaneous lymphoma and also can chase it away completely. Ultraviolet treatment, which is basically metered or dosed light UV radiation that, for those of you who have never seen or heard of it, basically it's performed in a dermatologist's office. It's not what one gets in the tanning salon. Topical chemotherapy comes in the form of ointments and creams. It has not been approved in the United States by the FDA and has been problematic in getting patients access to it. Other approved treatments include topical retinoids, which is a form of vitamin A. Bexarotene has been approved within the last 10 years, as well as Bexarotene has also been approved as a pill as well to take. Let me talk about radiation therapy, which has been shown to be very effective in clearing lesions of cutaneous lymphoma. It has been really used in rare, or I'm going to say it's not very commonly used, and so the expertise in treating cutaneous lymphoma with radiation therapy is isolated in what we consider centers of excellence, so that one should have a thorough discussion of when radiation therapy is indicated, and it's currently indicated really as a second-line treatment for either total skin in patients that have very, very bulky disease, or focal treatments or localized treatments to tumors of the skin. One of the pioneers for radiation therapy of the skin has been Stanford University, that are now going back and looking at their data over the last 40 years and trying to evaluate the dose, an optimal dosage for the radiation therapy of the skin, so that more people can get more radiation treatments with less doses and greater effects. So that is something we can look forward to in the future in redefining or recalibrating the dosage for radiation therapy to make it more effective. In terms of developments for topical therapies, I mentioned topical chemotherapy, carmustin and mechlorethamine or nitrogen mustard have long been utilized for many years as compounded agents. I'm a principal investigator of a trial and also a consultant for the company that's developing a manufactured nitrogen mustard, which hopefully will provide greater access for individuals who need or can benefit from the topical therapy. One comment I want to amplify what Dr. Porcu said about systemic therapies, and again, along with the notion that we haven't had many clinical trials or many numbers of patients to identify what is the best treatment specifically. When treatments come along and are approved, they are approved as a single agent or a single drug or a single treatment. And as you may know, that many of successes with cancer is not with just a single treatment, but with a combination of treatments. And so the optimal combination of multiple treatments is best discovered through clinical trials. But in the absence of that, centers, many investigators have combined treatments, and that the very encouraging data that has come out, particularly the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Alan Rook, who directs their cutaneous lymphoma program, he has published his experience with using what he calls multimodality therapy. That is a combination of several things, several ingredients, and that he has shown that in Sézary syndrome, he has basically improved patients' performance, and so it indicates to us that we have several agents currently, and we have several agents in the pipeline, and that it is encouraging to see the number of agents and new drugs and treatments being developed, and that we have lots of room to develop the optimal combination to optimize treatment. So that's what I want to say about current perspectives and future directions with treatment from the dermatology point of view. Lastly, I want to conclude with remarks about communicating with your healthcare team. And I think that a few pointers. I think that the biggest obstacle for healthcare, for everyone, is really access to expertise. And Dr. Porku touched upon how the centers of excellence and the investigators and physicians who are treating this disease are coming together with interinstitutional collaboration, which I think will benefit everybody. But it's important to get access to the expertise, and I'll have to applaud the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation and Judy Jones's work for really enhancing the communication so that people are connected, people are networking, so they can find access to that expertise. Communication is key and coordination is key amongst different individuals, and that's why if you can get your care in one center where everybody is basically on the same electronic medical record, where records don't have to be faxed or carried over, it makes the care better coordinated. And regarding records, I think it benefits everyone. Basically, keep a copy of everything they have. I mean, each patient, the medical record is yours. I think if you keep a composite record and consolidate everything in one file, your file, that ensures that all the information is together. Whether you be treated on one part of this country or the other, I think it's important that the records be intact so there is a complete story for your diagnosis and treatment. But basically, as an individual going to the doctor's office, I think there are four basic facts that should be very clear to you. That is, number one, what is the diagnosis? Number two, what is the stage of the cutaneous lymphoma? Number three, what is the prognosis? You should have a comfort level as to how this is going to affect the quality of your life. And number four is, what are the treatment options? You should have a clear understanding that there are options and why a recommendation is being made or why you are choosing one versus the other. And I do think that it is important for you to go to the doctor's office, at least until you get comfortable going with someone else, that is, someone bringing someone along. Part of communication is listening, and many times in the beginning of the journey, people are overwhelmed, understandably, with stress and anxiety and distress, and it's hard to listen to all the information that is jam-packed into an office visit. So just like all hands on deck, as many ears on deck is helpful. So I think that's my comments for communication, and I'll turn the program over to Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lesson, for just an excellent presentation and also these wonderful tips about really keeping your own records, which is really very important. And really, all hands on deck, all ears on deck is a great phrase. We haven't actually ever used that before in these programs, and it's a great idea to also have, you know, other people with you to listen to everything that's said. So we'll say more about that. That'll probably come up during the Q&A. So thank you. Excellent. Our next, now we have a few speakers who are actually going to talk about their organizations and how they can offer you some free services and support. And we're going to start with Judy Jones, who's the president of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. And I think it's probably a household word to many of you on this program, but Judy has really been instrumental in helping to plan the program today and also in our helping us to kind of really plan the topics to address as being the most relevant for all of your needs. So I'm going to turn the program over to Judy.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's really exciting to have so many people on this call, which would not have been possible without collaboration in the Patient Advocacy Committee. It seems like collaboration is the word of the day. I hope that you have learned, even though this is a rare disease, there's a lot going on in this field. Patients need to know there are dedicated physicians and researchers working on improving treatments and working toward a better understanding of our disease. The Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation will be hosting the Cutaneous Lymphoma Summit to be held at the Hilton, New York on October 9th through 11th of this year. Program chairs Stuart Lesson and Pierluigi Porcu have invited speaking faculty that includes the world's top cutaneous lymphoma leaders, clinicians, and experts in patient support issues. The program is aimed at facilitating dialogue among all the stakeholders in cutaneous lymphoma. They will identify key basic and clinical targets to be rapidly tackled by the cutaneous lymphoma research community to better understand this disease. In addition to the scientific program, there will be a day-long cutaneous lymphoma patient educational forum, which is an exceptional opportunity for patients to have access to experts in the field and connect with other patients for support. We also have a program for dermatology and oncology nurses with an outstanding faculty. Go to our website to sign up and get more information about this significant collaborative event. I'd like to personally thank Dr. Lesson and Dr. Porcu for donating their time to provide this information and keep us up to date about the interesting field of cutaneous lymphomas. Carolyn?
Well, thank you very much, Judy. And Judy, is the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation is a wonderful resource for everyone on this call, so please do really visit their website. Contact Judy. It's a wonderful resource. Our next speaker is Jennifer Mills, Jen Mills. Jen is an oncology social worker, and she's National Director of Patient Programs, Lymphoma Research Foundation. And I really want to thank Jen for making the program possible in terms of just being able to support the program and also for her wonderful ideas about the program itself and planning it. And Jen is going to say some words about the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Jen?
Thank you, Carolyn. On behalf of the Lymphoma Research Foundation, we extend our deepest gratitude to Cancer Care and to the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation for their continued commitment to the delivery of quality educational programs such as this. As Judy mentioned, it really is through these collaborations that we're better able to serve you, the patient community. Just a little bit of information about LRF. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused voluntary health organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing patients and healthcare professionals with critical information on the disease. LRF's mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. To achieve this mission, LRF provides a comprehensive series of programs and services for patients, survivors, and loved ones. These include our Lymphoma Helpline and Clinical Trials Information Service, publications and newsletters, informational teleconferences such as this, along with webcasts, in-person conferences, and a whole other range of materials and services that we'd be happy to share with you. We know that a lymphoma diagnosis can be very confusing and overwhelming for you and your loved ones. We also know that people are looking for information specifically focusing on their form of the disease. To help you in this search, LRF offers several cutaneous lymphoma-specific resources that have been developed in collaboration with the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, including new webcasts and podcasts, including resources specifically designed for those of you in your teens, 20s, and 30s with the cutaneous lymphoma. These can be accessed via the web, on iTunes, or on YouTube. There are also many new fact sheets on rare forms of the disease that have not previously existed. It's a pleasure for LRF to collaborate with the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation on numerous in-person programs throughout the year around the country, and we look forward to serving you through those. We're here to help you. Lymphoma patients, survivors, and loved ones are our focus here at LRF, and for more information on any of these programs, please just give us a call at 800-500-9976 or visit us on the web. Thanks so much, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Jen. And indeed, all that information is also in your materials, so definitely contact the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And our last speaker this morning is Richard Dickens. Rick is an oncology social worker. He's program coordinator of blood cancers, project coordinator of mind-body program at Cancer Care, and he'll tell you some about cancer care and services you can access from here as well.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Drs. Porcu and Lesson, for your thoughtful presentation, and to Jen and Judy for the invaluable work your organizations provide. I want to give you a brief introduction of what Cancer Care can offer you after this telephone education workshop. A cancer diagnosis often brings uncertainty to the life of a patient, as well as to those who know, love, and work with that person. At Cancer Care, we have over 40 master's degree social workers specializing in oncology who are here to help you resolve some of the conflicts you might be struggling with and ultimately to help find some level of peace. Now, this can be emotional peace through one of our many professionally facilitated telephone, online, and face-to-face groups, or in a counseling intervention with one of our social workers. Peace might be some respite from financial concerns through one of our financial grants, referrals to other resources, or in one of our cancer care fact sheets that we send out or can be downloaded online. Or perhaps you can gain knowledge and peace of mind through one of our educational workshops like today. Or guidance on how to navigate the complicated world of cancer treatment and recovery through better healthcare communication, understanding hospital billing, or additional community-based resources that you weren't aware of. Tips that can guide you along this process, do your research. The Internet is a good place to start, but there are many helpful organizations such as Cancer Care that can guide you through this process. Take your time. Saying I need a day to think about this can give you an opportunity to catch your breath and get feedback from loved ones and from other resources. And finally, to speak up. Remember, your doctor and oncology team can't treat a problem if you don't make them aware of it. At Cancer Care, we can't promise to solve all of the concerns that may arise out of a cancer diagnosis and treatment, but with over 60 years in the ever-changing field of oncology, we are dedicated to trying, one patient and one family at a time. And you can reach us likewise at 1-800-813-HOPE and on the Internet. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, and excellent presentations. And now we do have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Mary to explain to you how to queue up for questions, and we're going to start the questions. Mary?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Rochelle W.
Hi. I believe that's me.
Hi, Rochelle. Yes.
Okay. First one to be called. I was shocked. Anyway, I'm calling. I am stage one CTCL. I'm being seen by Dr. Nobler at Columbia Presbyterian, and I've been diagnosed 2 years ago. I'm taking UVB, and I was wondering, when is it necessary to see an oncologist? So far, I have never seen an oncologist. All the testing was done by Dr. Nobler's office.
I see. Actually, Dr. Lesson, if you want to respond, Dr. Porku.
Let me start, and Dr. Porku can add in if you would like. With stage one disease of the skin, it basically is confined to the skin. And the term indolent refers to slow growing, virtually benign in a sense, and that systemic involvement does not occur suddenly with this disease. It occurs after the disease progresses, typically very slowly. So before one gets to a higher stage of involvement on the skin, it progresses to greater and greater involvement on the skin. So that if the skin is responding to skin-directed therapies, or any therapy for that matter, there really is very little chance or probability that it is smoldering in an internal site that is undiscovered. So the oncologist typically gets involved when there is evidence of advanced disease that requires their intervention and treatment. So that as long as the early stage cutaneous or CTCL is responding to treatment and not advancing, there really isn't any indication or to suspect that there is more advanced disease. Dr. Porku?
Yeah, hi, Sue. Hi, Rochelle. Thank you for calling. I think that I want to echo what Dr. Lesson said in the sense that the skin in CTCL is a very good window of what is going on. In other words, if things are going well in the skin, it is extremely unlikely that something else is going on anywhere else. And I think this is a very important point of reassurance from the standpoint of certainly the patients, but also from the standpoint of the doctors who need to have some benchmarks to follow to be sure about what's going on. I think that the question of when the medical oncologist needs to be involved, it is almost like a trick question in the sense that it depends on what you're asking the medical oncologist to do. Because if what is asked of the medical oncologist is to offer or initiate a systemic treatment for the CTCL, then it is true that you don't really need to have the medical oncologist involved until you have sort of failed multiple skin-directed therapies or, until things start to become a little more difficult in the management of the skin. But I think that if you're asking, on the other hand, what is the kind of the intellectual contribution to the team and from the standpoint of providing guidance and counseling, I think that the medical oncologist should be involved from the beginning. Usually what happens is that you have a multidisciplinary team where you have a medical oncologist and a dermatologist who are working side by side. If the management of the skin is straightforward and the patient is responding, even if you have a medical oncologist as a member of the team, you may not need to see the medical oncologist all the time. But what you need to know is that your dermatologist is talking to the medical oncologist all the time, and vice versa. I think that the contribution here, I mean, the contribution of the multidisciplinary team is that people think strategically along the same lines. This certainly happens a lot of times even now, even without a multidisciplinary team. In other words, if you are seeing a dermatologist who is an expert in CTCL, then chances are that your dermatologist is already thinking strategically along what the modern, most recent guidelines of management are. But you may not be sure about that unless you're really sophisticated in asking questions and assessing the answers. So when you have a multidisciplinary team, you know that you're seeing the dermatologist, but the dermatologist is talking to the colleague all the time. And how are they talking? They're talking because usually when there is a multidisciplinary program, you have like a weekly conference where, you know, the dermatologist, the oncologist, the pathologist, and frequently the radiation doctor, they sit together, they go through the patient list, okay, let's see what Mrs. Smith, situation is right now, what do you think, what will be the best way, what the best, perhaps the clinical trials, and so on. This is something that happens in all the cancer centers, it happens here, it happens at Fox Chase, it happens in Houston, Stanford, and Northwestern, and so on. But in New York, but may not be happening in the dermatology office in a more peripheral situation. Just like this is true, the opposite is true as well. In other words, you don't want to have a medical oncologist managing your perhaps advanced stage CTCL solo. Dr. Lessin mentioned, the dermatologist has to be part of the team from the beginning in terms of the early stage to the more advanced stages. There's always something to do for the skin, even in advanced stages, even if you're taking systemic treatment. So the way I see it is really as a team where the leader, like a bike race, where the leader, the person who is driving, it can be different depending on the situation, but you need everybody paddling together.
Excellent. So we really want that multidisciplinary team in action really throughout the whole process. It really helps, and that's a very important message to hear, and that's an issue that comes up in many of our programs. It's really critically important. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Don.
Yes, this is Don.
Yes. Your question, Don.
Yeah, my question is, in stage 1A MF, can clearing the skin of patches through treatment favorably impact the progression of the disease?
Dr. Porku, could you address that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you're asking it, Don, and it is a question that even researchers in CTCL should ask themselves, I think, more. I like also to hear from Dr. Lesson after I finish my impression. But my view is that as of now, there is no data to support the idea that by eliminating completely the disease in stages as early as 1A, with whatever modality of therapy you may need, like topical therapy or light therapy and so on, actually has an impact on the prognosis or an impact on the probability of the disease progressing to a more advanced stage. Now, to prove that point it would require a very long and very large clinical trial, and I'm not sure that we're going to ever be able to prove that. And it boils down mostly to clinical practice patterns across the United States and across different physicians, where some physicians, and usually stage 1A is predominantly treated hands-on by the dermatologist, but you know, most dermatologists will treat once they make a decision that treatment is necessary, because you know, either because of a cosmetic reason or where the lesions are, or because itching. But once you make the decision about treatment, then I think that the proper goal of treatment will be to make the lesions go away. However, whether or not that makes a difference in terms of the prognosis is very difficult to prove. You have to understand that the prognosis is incredibly good. So to prove that you're making a difference, it takes an enormous will take an enormous amount of time. The other thing is that very often you may clear a lesion with proper therapy, and then you may have, you know, some time down the road, you may have another lesion developing, and they still remain within stage 1A, but you may have new lesion developing over time. And should you treat every single lesion? Should the goal kind of almost obsessively to be the elimination of all the areas in the skin? That is an open question. I'd like to hear what Dr. Lesson has to say.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lesson.
Don, your question is absolutely indicative of what medicine is all about, and that is making decisions in the absence of clear data. And Dr. Porcu is absolutely correct. There are no prospective studies, as he's describing, that would tell us exactly what the benefit of clearing is. A prospective study is that you start a study at a particular time and move forward in time and collect the data. However, I believe that we can glean information from retrospective studies that is in the literature. And those retrospective studies are case control studies that were taken from Stanford University and the University of California, San Francisco in the 90s that after up to 30 years of treating patients, they retrospectively, they looked backwards and saw how they did. And they compared them with age and gender match controls. And that type of study isn't as predictive as a prospective study, and so we're talking about methodologies here, but basically you can glean some insight. And what I glean from those studies is that, yes, it appears that, number one, in the two retrospective studies, that patients with stage 1A, earliest disease, when matched with patients of their same age and gender and followed looked at the same time period, they do not have any additional disadvantage in terms of their lifespan. And furthermore, that very few people ever progressed, and that they try to analyze the factors involved in lack of progression. One of those factors are people who sustained a complete response. So I put a lot of importance in sustaining a complete response in early disease. And for me, I interpret that complete response as a prognostic factor. And I feel very comfortable based on what those retrospective studies have shown, and based on my personal experience following patients and treating patients for 25 years, I feel comfortable in telling patients that if you have 1A disease and you completely respond, I believe that you are in a category that the disease won't progress. So that's where medicine is very, very gray, in the sense that many times we all want to have black and white answers, and there's really a lack of data. And so that's the way I interpret and nuance things, and so that's my response.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Lawson. And our next question, please. We have really – this is a remarkable audience. You're asking wonderful questions. So our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Ravi.
Hi. Thank you very much. I think this has been a very informative call so far. My question for the doctors is on this issue of combination therapy, which is becoming, I think, more common for CTCL. And I was just hoping that the doctors could elaborate on this point with respect to what types of combination therapies are typically used in early stage CTCL-MF. With respect to both the topicals as well as the other types of therapy.
Thank you very much for that excellent question. Dr. Porku, would you like to go first?
Happy to do it. Thanks, Ravi, for calling. Great question. So I think that the combinations in early stage CTCL, the most typical combination is the combination of ultraviolet light-based therapy. We call it phototherapy. With a systemic agent. And historically, the systemic agent that has been added to phototherapy has changed as new drugs have become available. Initially, there were combinations of phototherapy with drugs like alpha interferon, for example. There were combinations with drugs like methotrexate. Gradually, as retinoids have become available, there have been combinations of phototherapy with retinoids, and one of the retinoids is a drug that many of you are familiar with. It's called bexarotene or targretin. These are the most important combinations that have been used. Generally, it is well established that combination therapy leads to a significantly higher chance of complete response. I do share with Dr. Lesson the impression that a complete response in CTCL certainly is more likely to be associated with a longer duration of that response. There are also combinations between electron beam radiation therapy and systemic therapies, although the clinical trials for that have been less well developed, and there are fewer numbers of patients. The second way of looking at the combination, which is probably not what you, Ravi, were referring to, but is for more advanced stages, is the combination of two or more different systemic therapies. Maybe I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to leave perhaps that to another question, unless Ravi wants me to talk about it.
And Dr. Porco, did you want to actually add something to the comment you made? It'd be fine.
About the systemic, the combination?
Yes.
Of systemic.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I would say that this is not for early stage. By early stage, we mean stage 1A to 2A, and then anything that is 2B or greater, that would be considered more advanced stage. But so when we look at systemic therapies, now that there are at least three approved systemic drugs for CTCL, and they are targretin, which is an oral retinoid, ONTAC, which is an intravenous infusion immunotoxin, and then Zolenza, which is a pill. So now there are a variety of different combinations of those drugs that are increasingly being studied, and clinical trials are the best way to assess these combinations. Some of these clinical trials are in progress, and I think that the results will be available soon. But in practice, They are frequently used together, and there's a component of art in the management of CTCL, as Dr. Lesson was describing, that is based on experience and knowledge of the side effects of the drugs and how to use them, that is important. And these combinations are certainly used in common practice by CTCL experts around the country.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank really our speakers today. They were really outstanding, most informative. This was an amazing program, a really extraordinary program. I also want to thank all of you who've queued up and really asked such really excellent questions. You know, your questions really, we know you ask these questions to get some help in terms of your own question, in terms of yourself, but in asking a question, you end up really helping, you know, it's everybody on the call, and you allow the speakers to elaborate on a point that you have raised. So you're really just an outstanding group of people on this call, I have to say. And I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour education program, and then playing a program like this, we all recognize that an hour, you know, provides some information to all of you, but that we want you to know that you are now part of a community of support and that we want you to access services from all these different organizations that we have talked about today, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation, and Cancer Care. All of us offer free services. We offer you help with getting information. We offer you help with a lot of just the logistics, the day-to-day dealing with your disease. And we want you to feel that you now, that we are with you every step of the way. You simply have to call us or visit our website to take advantage of those free services. Most importantly, as we conclude our program today, I would not want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with CTCL or any other cutaneous lymphoma or any other issue that you're dealing with. I want you to now feel that you are part of a community of support, and we are simply a phone call away in terms of our being able to help you. And for our international participants or anyone who likes to use the Internet or an Internet, a mouse click away, where either way, we're right here, available to help you. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the program. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.